Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. You are listening to the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Sean's on the board over there.
How's everyone doing?
We have a jam-packed show full of guests today. We got three different guests. Two of them will be joining us here in studio, one over the phone, and we're jumping right into it. We have Vince, and I hope I pronounced his last name right, Rufino?
You got it. You
Is that
it.
Correct?
Congratulations.
Perfect. There we go. I'm doing well with these. I want to call them odd last names, but the last names don't encounter every day.
Well, you know, I always tell my friends, and they always make fun of me, but it's Rufino, like the wine, the Italian wine
okay.
from Tuscany. So that's kind of how I tell people.
But I like that way of memorizing it. I'm not a big wine drinker, but I'll write that one down.
Believe it or not, when you associate things with wine drinking, a lot of people tend to get it.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's a nice, easy way to get to the people. He is the Aces marketing manager. He's here joining us today talking about some fun stuff going on this weekend. But first, let's talk a little bit about you, Vince. You're an East Coast kid.
I am.
Growing up over there on the East Coast, did you play baseball growing up? What was kind of your interaction with baseball as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I played baseball growing up. I played Little League and things of that nature. Played a little bit in high school, just rec league and leagues like that. But I was more especially growing up as a kid, playing travel soccer in Connecticut, traveling all over the state, playing different tournaments, teams, and things like that. So I kind of had baseball as an ancillary sport, kind of something that got me away from my primary sport. But I always loved baseball, whether it be, in 2005 with MVP baseball on PlayStation 2. I mean, maybe that's a dated reference these days now with everything that's coming out and all the new video games and stuff. But I fell in love with baseball as a kid. And then I was fortunate enough to, after I graduated from St. John's University in Queens, to start working for the New York Mets and kind of start my career there and in baseball. So the last 3 years when I was there, like I was telling you before we came into the studio,
yeah.
I just fell in love with the sport, watching the game, whether it be playing MLB The Show, going to games, watching the game, learning about the business of the game. But I've just fallen in love with the sport, and it's what I'm most passionate about. And now I get to market what I'm passionate about. So for me, it's really just living a dream come true for me and trying to progress my career where I can.
Yeah, totally. And speaking about your time with the Mets, you were there during the 2015 World Series run. You were telling me that.
Yeah.
Earlier, that had to be just quite a circus around, especially in New York City with a team pushing for a title like that. That had to be a pretty crazy scene week to week.
I mean, that whole year of 2015 was one of the craziest times of my life, I tell people. If you remember correctly, the Mets that year kind of struggled through the first half of the season. That was the year they made the Cespedes trade right at the trade deadline, too. So that year, they had the Wilmer Flores crying incident. I believe that was in May and June. And then they made the Cespedes trade in July, and the team took off from there and just started winning. So the prospects of postseason baseball didn't really cross our minds until, middle of August when we're like, oh boy, like, we're making a big push here.
Yeah.
And we end up overtaking the Nationals towards the end of July and just had a great magical run. And then for me professionally, just being able to go in 2015 to the 2015 National League Championship Series, I was in the two games in New York and was fortunate enough to fly out to Chicago for games 3 and 4 and witness the organization I was working for win a pennant, which a lot of people dream to see.
Yeah.
And then from there, just getting on a red-eye flight, flying back to New York, going to work the next day and getting ready for a World Series, a couple days later, jumping on a chartered flight to Kansas City and going to games 1 and 2 and then coming back to New York for games 3 through 5. I mean, like I said, it was just an incredible experience, winning a National League pennant for an organization and getting my hands on some sort of ring, which is what we all kind of strive for in this industry. It's kind of the golden goose there at the end of everything. So while it's not a World Series ring, and I blame Eric Hosmer completely for that.
Never dies, folks. It never settles. It never goes away.
I have never forgiven Eric Hosmer, even when he played for Team USA last year on World Baseball Classic. I just couldn't bring myself to reform. It's nothing personal. It has everything to do with me. But that was, like I said, an incredible, incredible experience.
Were you a Mets fan growing up as a kid? Or
So this is where I out myself as a Yankee fan.
It's going to happen sooner or later, right?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in Connecticut, to be honest, it's either Yankees or Red Sox.
Right.
And for me, my dad was a big Yankee fan, and we would go every year. And then when I moved to New York, I went more and more and more, just having that accessible.
Cool.
So I've been a diehard Yankee fan. So when people asked me, are you a Yankee fan or a Met fan? I would just tell them that the check's cashed for the Mets, so go Mets. Let's go Mets.
There you go. That's what's important right there. So let's talk about this weekend coming up at Greater Nevada Field, because there's a lot of fun stuff happening this weekend. It starts tonight. You guys are doing a home run for life, celebrating. I can't remember her name. right now, but she overcame breast cancer and she'll be taking part in that tonight. So you want to give the folks a little more information on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize. I actually don't have our participants' name tonight either. But it's going to be – it's a really moving experience where they round the bases. They have the opportunity to give high fives to both the opposing and home teams. And it's really just a celebration of overcoming an obstacle that was in your way, a life-challenging obstacle that was in your way. And for us to be a part of that and be able to bring someone from the community out to our ballpark, our stadium, and to be a part of that, for us, that means everything. We are celebrating our 10th season here in Reno this season, and for us, we just really enjoy being a part of this community. We feel the community pride here, and we want to be a part of that in any way possible. We feel that pride, too, that you guys feel. So anything that we can do to elevate this community, to bring this community to the forefront, because we think it's a special community, is something that we're going to do. And that's why we really love this partnership with St. Mary's and the Home Run for Life on Fridays.
Yeah, absolutely. Carol Davison is her name. So she overcame breast cancer that she was diagnosed with, I believe, in 2014. So obviously, from the Aces and obviously from our show here, just a big congratulations, and that's always something to celebrate when you can overcome that. And yeah, then it continues to tomorrow night. We were talking a little bit about this before the show too, and it was blowing my mind a little bit, but it's superhero night, is
yes,
that
sir.
Correct?
Yeah, it's superhero night at Greater Nevada Field, and well, like I was telling you before we even came in, it's more than a baseball game tomorrow. It's really a festival at Greater Nevada Field and at our stadium. We're going to have the Lego Let's Play Tour here. They're actually here tonight. They're going to start setting up very soon at GNF.
Okay.
And then they're also going to be here tomorrow out in the Circus Kids Zone. So families can bring their kids out. They're going to be all kinds of different PlayStations with all kinds of different Legos that kids can create and kind of have fun while the family enjoys the game. We're going to have life-size Lego statues. Iron Man statues going to be here, kind of going on the theme of superhero night. So really cool. We're going to have Captain America here tomorrow to take photos with everyone, so you'll have an opportunity to take a photo with a superhero. We're going to have all kinds of different specialty food options. We're really excited about this. We have about five or six different food options for people to try. It's just on this night, so you can only get these foods tomorrow night. So we came up with the Captain America cocktail, which is a red, really refreshing drink. We have the Thorio Sundae, so that's a soft serve ice cream smothered in Oreo crumbles and some signature sauces on top of there. We have the Hulk pizza, which is a pesto based pizza that people can pick up at the Wild Garlic stand.
How big is it?
So the pizza itself is regular size, but the slices are fairly large.
Okay.
So
all right, there you go.
You got to bring your hunger for it. So we, like I said, a couple of food different options. We're gonna have a pregame superhero strut on the warning track. So anyone wearing their favorite superhero, either costume, T-shirt, cape, anything like that, we invite you guys to meet us out in center field at 6:20, and they can walk the field. So superhero night tomorrow.
Very cool.
Going to be super fun, all kinds of awesomeness. We're going to be giving out 500 comic books of Venom number one on the concourse.
Exactly. Sean's jaw is on the table,
courtesy
folks.
Courtesy of Omega Frog Comics.
Can you just grab one for me, please? I'll be here working, but...
I mean, I can't go on the record with this. But yeah, we're going to have that. And then for families that are coming out, just make sure you arrive early. The first 1,000 kids, 12 and under, get a kid's cape as well as part of the night. So
so is the festival kind of an all-day kind of ongoing thing, or does it start maybe in the afternoon and go towards the game time?
Yeah, so we're going to have a vendor fair outside the stadium that's going to open up around 4 or 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Gates are going to open up at 6:05. So I encourage people to arrive around 5:30, 6 o'clock. We're going to have, like I said, Captain America out front taking photos with people and kind of interacting. There's also going to be a Lego truck out front that you'll have an opportunity to take some pictures with and things of that nature. So I would say get to the stadium a little bit early. Make sure you can get your kids' cape giveaway and then get into the stadium so maybe you can avoid some early concession lines if you want to check out those food items. And then you're going to want to be in your seats around 7 because then game time starts and we have a really fun baseball team to watch too.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been doing really well. And then one last thing. Next weekend, you guys also have the World Fighting Championship coming by. Any information that we can give out to the fans regarding that next weekend?
Yeah, they can find all the information on greaternevadafield.com. For that, we're going to have a bunch of different belt championship fights. The octagon itself is going to be at home plate.
This is a really cool
experience for everyone.
My goodness.
Yeah, so you can. I believe we have some tickets available on the field. If not, you can get some tickets, obviously, really close to the field, and you're going to be right there on top of the action. So next Friday night, Greater Nevada Field, greaternevadafield.com has all the information where you can purchase tickets for that.
So there you go, folks. There's no excuse not to get out out to the ballpark, whether it's for a baseball game or an event or a festival. Always something going on at Greater Nevada Field.
Yeah.
Well, Vince, thank you very much for stopping by and spending some time with us. We really appreciate it. Again, while the Aces are here on their homestand, go out and check them out against Iowa tonight. They have a series against Omaha, I believe, starting tomorrow. That goes four games. So get out there and support the Aces. And when we come back from this break, Mike Mazzaferri will be here to talk about the U.S. Open and what chaos is going on over there. You're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio. Our next guest here joining us is Mike Mazzaferri. He is a Sierra Sage Golf Pro. Mike, thanks a lot for coming in and talking to us. I know it's on a beautiful day like this, it's got to be tough to step away from the golf course and come in and talk, but thank you for doing so. How's your day going so far?
Thanks for having me, first of all, Spencer. Day's going good. You know, it's Father's Day weekend, the U.S. Open's on, and lots of excitement around.
Yeah, you can't complain when there's a major golf tournament on TV. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. Was this is golf a game that you kind of picked up on your own, or did someone kind of introduce it to you, and then you kind of took it from there? What was kind of your peak interest in golf?
My dad was Air Force. We lived on an Air Force base in Texas, and at 8 years old, I jumped the fence and started playing. And,
okay.
As my mom tells the story, I went to the course when I was eight and never came home.
Gotcha. All right. Very cool. What Air Force base did you grow up on?
Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
The course I learned to play and kind of cut my teeth on.
Oh, very cool. All right. You don't hear a lot of people getting to play the game of golf on a military course like that to start. Was there any kind of different, like, around the course or?
No, not really. I think, you know, a lot of the military bases in the old days had courses and still are quite a few out there, but it's for people that are military, the base courses are pretty good and they're okay. Affordable. So it's pretty cool.
Okay. Very cool. And then it's fair to say that obviously you have a lot of experience in teaching golf at several levels, pretty much every level that's out there, good or bad, kind of throughout the years. What's been the biggest change in this sport that you've seen kind of throughout the levels of golf?
The biggest change in the sport is the equipment and the golf ball. You know, it's
okay.
Making a lot of these older courses. Shinnecock, where the U.S. Open is this week, is really an exception. But most of those old courses are obsolete because they're too short. And, you know, I think yesterday I saw Justin Thomas hit one 422 yards. Well, they're
Jeez.
Playing at sea level.
Yeah.
And nobody hit it 420 yards when in the 1960 U.S. Open. So the courses have to be bigger, stronger, more teeth, you know, to get these guys to – be, you know, have a good competition on.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I was sent a short bio of you and kind of your career, but I saw that you have three children as well, and I'd be shocked if they haven't picked up a golf club at some point in their life. What's kind of been their history with the game of golf?
You know, one daughter, Taylor, got a Division I golf scholarship. Our other daughter, Allie, was a competitive ice skater, so she kind of went to a winter sport. But my son, John, I got a golf management degree in the last couple of years, and he just passed his PGA player ability test last week.
Oh, very
cool.
So
he's getting in the business and is excited too.
Well, congratulations to him. That's very exciting to get that. And then so let's talk a little bit now about the U.S. Open. As you mentioned, it's at Shinnecock Hills this year. First time since, I believe, 2004 it's been at this location. And we just saw some real crooked scores go up yesterday. Is that something that is kind of a usual thing? I know it's a tough course, but is it usually that cockeyed when you see those scores?
The USGA likes to set up what is really known as the toughest test in golf for the U.S. Open. And it can backfire a little bit because they walk that edge of if they set it up really tough and then the conditions get tough. I mean, these guys play great in rain or bad weather, but wind changes a golf course. You know, it makes hitting the ball the right distance a premium. And a lot of the greens at Shinnecock, if you hit it short, it comes off. If you hit it long, it goes over the back. So hitting at the right distance, this is an unusual U.S. Open course because it's more this opens more about the second shots, you know, and hitting them the right distance and getting the ball in position. And U.S. Opens traditionally are getting it in the fairway and putting.
Yeah, I was amazed how many times watching a guy chip a ball onto the green yesterday. Literally, all you needed to be was off about a couple inches, and it just would not stop. It would just keep going and going. So as a player, when you're in that condition, how tough is it when you know you're playing a tough course not to let the wind or the weather really get too much on your mind
Yeah, it's about patience and knowing when to step on the gas, I think, and even when you might be in a position to step on the gas, if it's too risky, the reward's obviously going to be a par or birdie, but if you're going to make six or seven taking the chance to make a birdie, get a par and get out of there.
Right.
You know, and that's really the U.S. Open's about patience. But this week, I think whoever wins is going to be somebody who hits it the right, gets it in the fairway for the most part, and hits it the right distance on the second shot.
Absolutely. And then we've seen, obviously, the bigger names that are kind of in this tournament. I've never gotten to ask a golf pro this, but now that Tiger Woods is back kind of in the mainstream, is it more fantasy at this point to think that he really could win a major? Because we had all this talk going into the Masters, and he kind of hung in there, and now kind of where he is in the U.S. Open. Is it kind of just all just kind of fun talk at this point to think that he could really compete for a major?
You know, it's been 10 years since he won one. So,
yeah.
You know, I think he can. Phil Mickelson won in Mexico this spring. He's 47 years old and a World Golf Championship in Mexico City. And it's, you know, and the U.S. Open, you know, Hale Irwin won the U.S. Open at 45 because he wanted a course where premium was fairways hit, you know, and the rough was up to your knees.
Yeah.
You know, but so the U.S. Open can bring some different things. But I think if you look at Tiger's game, he's swinging good right now. And he needs to get into the scoring mentality and feel like the Tiger of old.
Yeah.
And I think his ball striking is good enough, but he's not putting like Tiger and wedging it like. And Tiger always chipped in, made long putts, and he's not doing any of that short game magic that he used to have. And if he gets that back, he can win.
Yeah, he definitely has the talent to make a run, and we've really seen that struggle of just being able to, again, put it all together for a round. But because we're getting into that next kind of age of golf players with Spieth and McIlroy and all these young guys coming in, is there a young player that you think kind of benefits from either a tougher course or maybe some tougher conditions on that course? Is there any younger player that kind of stands out in your mind?
You know, not really. I just think there's a big crop of younger players. When you look at, you know, Jordan Spieth, and you look at Justin Thomas and you know, lately Bryson DeChambeau and some of these kids, you know, any of them can win any week. But I think, you know, when you get into a guy like Tiger, you know, he was the defending champ in five majors in a row, and, you know, things that he did, it was more mental and how tough he was mentally, how tough Jack Nicklaus was mentally. And I think as I look at these kids, I see that tough mental in Jordan Spieth, but you know, they can all get there at times. Jason Day and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
You know, there's just such a good crop of young players, and I think it's great for golf.
And do you have a favorite? Do you think there's any kind of, I mean, I know Dustin Johnson's currently leading, but do you have a pick that you would kind of put your money on right now going into the weekend?
Well, I looked at the odds before the tournament, and Dustin was an 11-1 favorite to win.
Okay.
And he's tough. That was the top. The next, Jordan Spieth was 14-1, but the couple that I liked were Patrick Reed, and I think he shot 73 yesterday. I don't know how he's doing today. And Charlie Hoffman, because Patrick Reed was 35-1, so betting on him wasn't too bad. And Charlie Hoffman was 100-1. So,
oh wow, okay.
You know, so you can win a little bit of money if you put a few bucks on and look at the odds. But you know, you could almost say Dustin's going to be in the mix come Sunday because he's been playing so well. And
right,
you know, and we'll see. Usually the U.S. Open produces somebody that's an unknown or somebody who, you know.
Much like the Masters this year, we weren't really expecting Reed to come out here and perform like he did.
Yeah.
And, hopefully we can see a player like that. I think it's always good for golf. Not every major, but whenever you can have someone kind of come out of the blue, per se, it adds a little bit of an adrenaline boost to the sport.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially in golf, but other sports too, everybody roots for the underdog. And, you know, they can relate to a guy who hasn't won, and they root for him. And haven't hit Patrick win the Masters. But I pick Patrick and Charlie Hoffman simply because they have that penetrating. They can hit the low ball. And
gotcha.
they can control the flight their ball a lot lower. But hit it the right distance while they're doing that. And a lot of the guys like Justin Thomas, for example, they hit the ball so high when they hit it low, it's a different game for them, and they can't control the distance as well.
Yeah. And then I was watching the U.S. Open yesterday, I saw the announcement that next year it'll be back at Pebble Beach. How do you feel about it going back to that golf course again?
You know, I think it's cool when it goes to Pebble Beach or Bethpage or Erin Hills like it did. Some of the courses that, sure, cost a ton of money to play them, but, you know, the U.S. Open historically has been on private, really private golf courses, the Oakmonts and the Winchester West, you know, courses where, I mean, you really couldn't even join hardly if you had the money. And, you know, it's kind of neat that they go to courses that a lot of people have played. You know, a lot of people have been to Pebble Beach. A lot of people have been to Bethpage and Torrey Pines in San Diego and some of these public venues. And I think it's kind of cool that they're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives the golf a little more of a personal feel when you know you can reflect on these guys the same way they're going back and playing the course. You can say, oh, that's interesting, you know, and then go out there and try it yourself. If you have the skill to try what they're doing, I wouldn't. But if you do, it'd be a lot of fun. And then one last thing I want to ask you, because as I was doing research and Sean found this on the internet too. I think this happened a couple of years ago. You played 100 holes of golf.
Yeah, I play 100 holes of golf, usually in July or August every year, and it's for charity. I get sponsors, and our men's club at the golf course has a charitable foundation, a 501c3, and I do a few things to raise money for that, and we share the money around with the high school golf teams that play our golf course, Valleys, the first tee of Northern Nevada, Northern Nevada Junior Golf, the university golf teams we support with financially and, you know, buy shoes for them, do some things for them. And so we have to make money somehow. And I like to play. 100 holes is a little extreme, but
yeah, how long does that take you usually to get 100 holes in?
Usually 11 hours.
Wow.
And I can play like 9 holes an hour in a cart playing by myself, and I put spotters out and kind of to get people out of the way. And I just keep playing, and I don't stop.
I was going to ask you, if you break it up like into a certain section, you just go 11 hours pretty much straight.
You know, I'm too old now. If I stop, I hurt. I have to warm up again.
Yeah, well, very cool. Well, yeah, if you ever get a chance to get out there and play Sierra Stage, I've had the opportunity to play it once, and it's a beautiful course out there. It's a lot of fun. Any deals or anything coming up that you'd like to tell the listeners about?
You know, we have a couple of things. We do an annual trip, and next year – or this year, it should say, it's in January of 2019, we're taking a group to Cabo. And it's a charter flight, 180 people.
Oh,
you know,
very
and,
cool.
And it's we've sold 120 seats the first couple weeks we've been marketing it. But we do that every year, which is really fun. And it's nice because it's a charter 737.
Nice.
And, yeah, it's 35th year of doing it. It's
oh, very cool.
Yeah, we do that. We have a thing called More the Merrier in the afternoon, Spencer, that is becoming very popular, where if you come out as an individual, you can walk for $20 or ride for $31.
Okay.
There's two of you, you can ride for $29. There's three of you, you can ride for $27. If you have a foursome after 1:30 any day of the week, it's $25 with a cart.
Oh, wow.
And then we have golf boards. Nobody else has golf boards.
Oh, very cool. So, well, there you go, folks. Don't need much more of a reason to get out there and play. Well, Mike, thank you very much for coming in, spending some time and talking to us. When we come back from the break, we'll have Duke Williams live over the phone to talk about his new sports facility here in Reno. You're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio, everybody. Very, very excited to have this man joining us over the phone now. He's a former Hug High athlete. He's a former Nevada Wolfpack football player, spent some time in the NFL, and is now coming home to start a very cool project. Mr. Duke Williams joins us on the phone. Duke, how you doing today, man?
Duke, you there?
Is Duke there?
Hello.
We lose Duke? All right, well, we're going to try and get Duke here on the phone. While we're trying to do that, we'll talk a little bit. I don't want to say too much in case we do get him back on here. But he is starting a very cool thing called the No Limits Sports Lab, which is here in Reno. It's an all-in-one sporting facility for kids, I believe, 6 years old and up, just teaching them about, you know, the sporting conditioning, getting them, you know, nutrition ideas and layouts and what to do there, and then also you know, giving them academic help as well, making sure they can stay on track. It's a very, very, very cool program, and the fact that you know, honestly, when these athletes leave this area and like Duke, had the option to go pro, opportunity to go pro. There's never really any kind of a guarantee they'll come back to this area. And he really could have gone anywhere to start this program. And the fact that he came back home, he came back to Reno to do this is very, very cool. So I'm hoping we get this figured out. Sean is working his rear end off right now to try and get this thing going. We do have Haley who's still here. I don't know if her mic is on. I don't think it is. Yes, it is. We have Haley here back with us in studio. We'll fill the time like this. Hi, Haley.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going good.
have you been watching any baseball lately?
Giants, yeah.
Giants?
Yeah.
They just got done with a series with the Miami Marlins.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that
was a little. We won't talk about that. Oh, Ken's in the building. he said not to mention Ken. All right, we won't mention Ken. Ken's not here. Forget I said that.
We're going to Men in Black just like click something.
He should be back. Duke, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us, Duke. What was the inspiration? You're coming back here to Reno to start this No Limit Sports Lab, which is a super cool facility here. What was the kind of inspiration behind starting that?
Well, you know, I'm inspired. I'm growing up there, actually. And
on OPD, just...
Hello?
Duke, yeah, are you there? You're kind of going in and out. Yeah. We're hearing you, though.
Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. You sound great now.
Okay, perfect. All right, yeah, so coming back here was a choice I had made because I wanted to come back and help the community that I grew up in. And we know that places can get in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you yourself, you were a multi-sport athlete in high school. You played football, you played basketball, you also took part in track and field. So I know this sporting facility is going to be all-inclusive to different sports. Are you guys looking at a certain amount of sports to kind of start with, or is it all just kind of out there and available for the kids?
Yeah, well, what I'm doing generally is training a complete athlete, so no matter what sport you play, it'll accommodate to that sport. And if you, we have a 7-on-7 AAU team, and we had guys that also got offered. We had 6 guys get offered in the last month, which is great, you know, and that's the thing we're doing. We're getting these kids exposure. So now we have a track team, an AAU team that we have that's going to travel this summer. And we have actually a basketball team coming together as well. So we're looking to do every single sport. And we're just on the mission to, you know, kind of corner every high school sport in every aspect, you know, to send them to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. We've really seen a rise in talent in this Reno Tahoe area over the last 7 or so years. So it's great to see them start to get a really rightful exposure nationally. Where are these teams going to be traveling to? Is it mostly along the West Coast, or is it more all over national? Or what's kind of the travel schedule for these teams?
Yeah, so we've been traveling on the West Coast. We've been in L.A., Fresno, Sacramento, Utah, and, you know, parts of Northern California. And next year, you know, we're prepared to go to Florida, Texas, go to Atlanta, go to different states and try to find the best competition, you know, to get our guys exposure. And right now, you know, we have offers already from schools. Like I said, we have Jameson Halu, we have Wyatt, we have Anthony Hill, and we have guys, younger guys that are going to come up and step up the next year and, you know, keep this thing going strong. And right now, you know, I've been only training for a couple months and guys are already responding. We're getting a lot of, you know, attention and guys are really getting out there, and it's a great thing. And that's one thing when I made the decision to come back to Reno to have these kids, have an outlet for these kids to be able to get exposure, because there's different cities out there, you know, Atlanta, LA, where, you know, it's a culture and they get it. They know what it takes to get their athletes to the next level and, you know, get them that college education and get their school paid for. And, you know, I just want to implement that thing in the Northern Nevada, Sparks, and the surrounding area.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's super great that kind of a program is coming here locally. And I saw that you guys are aiming for more of a late summer opening, which I think is super smart to try and start to get this thing going right before junior high and high school sports seasons really kind of take off. Is there any kind of rules or regulations? Can you have a certain amount of contact with these kids while they're in during a high school season, or is it kind of just based on the player and the coaches of the high schools?
Well, myself and my coaches, we're not affiliated with any college or any of the sort. We're a company that, just provides for the athletes, and, we can train the athletes in season, out of season. We can show up to games. We can support them. And really, that's what I really want to, put it out there, that I'm neutral. I don't have ties to any certain schools, or I'm not recruiting. This is not a recruiting service. This is basically me getting your athlete and transition a prep athlete into a collegiate student athlete. So that's what I want to, put out there, because, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, with the sports world and trying to get frowned upon when guys are, and a part of the, college process. So that's one thing that's great about us. We're just, neutral guys, and we just want to see these athletes succeed and get to that next level that they want to reach.
Yeah, that is great. That is just great stuff. And then, as I mentioned, you were a multi-sport athlete. What kind of drew you to football away from a basketball and track? What was it about football that kind of stood out and made you want to stick with that over a long period of time?
Well, it kind of just stuck with me, to be honest. So I was real natural at football. And, obviously, I was real successful with track and field and basketball in high school. And it was just coming down to what made me happy and what I love to do. And, my ultimate decision was football, even though, I had a lot of, big time schools come, recruiting me for track, which, I was proud of, but, staying here in Reno and being, part of this support system that I had was a great decision, because I was able to, prosper from, staying, with my circle I had, my support system and my family and my friends, because I needed those guys to help me, guide me through, especially being in UNR and, getting a little bit of trouble and having a couple stumbles. I was able to lean on my support system and to, rise above everything that was going on. So, playing football, UNR was like one of the best decisions I ever made in my life.
Yeah, having that team aspect and that team support around you can really make a world of difference. And then I was curious, seeing as how you were a football player in college during the BCS era, now that we're a couple years into the college football era, do you like the football playoff system? What are your feelings kind of on that?
Well, I think it gives a better indication on who's the most dominant program in the college football. I believe if we had that system, it would have been more of a motivation for us to try to reach that game and reach the BCS tournament. And I think it's good for the sport. I think it's good for college football.
Would you like to see it expanded to a little more than four teams, or do you think four teams is kind of the right size for this tournament?
Yeah, of course. If they can do eight to 10 games, and I don't know how they would do that, maybe shorten the regular season up or expand, the games they're playing. And I don't know how would that work, but I would love to see, a longer tournament, and, then you get to see, because sometimes there's a team that's ranked number three or four that, is better than the second team. And I like to see, those teams get tested by, a team that feels like they deserve the right to, be number one or be number two. So I would love to see a longer tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. And then I have one more question before we let you go. You spent your professional career in Buffalo, and I've seen the kind of games that they can have over there and the weather. Did you ever play in a blizzard game or any kind of a snowstorm like that? What was kind of the worst weather game you had in Buffalo?
Oh, man. So the worst weather I ever had in Buffalo was actually not during the game. It was it was during the week of a Detroit game where Lake Erie had snowed over and we had a snowstorm, And, you know, it was like we're getting like national coverage. you know, so much snow, it was like 8 feet of snow piling up. And then the thing was, my house was actually a half a mile away from Lake Erie. So I got the worst of the worst of the worst of the snowstorm.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I was trapped in the house for 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
I was okay for the first, you know, the end of the 3 days. And then I started running out of food. So when I started running out of food, I started getting nervous because I wasn't able to go outside because it was just horrible. You couldn't see outside because the snow was so high. And we had actually guys on our team that own like snow plows and snowmobiles. So they actually like took it upon themselves to come rescue us. So I got rescued by one of my teammates on the third day before I starved. So that was an experience I never thought I would have to live through, but you know, I made it through, and I'm able to tell this story to you today.
Yeah, that's crazy. We've had some big snowstorms here in Reno's, as you know, but never been actually snowed into our house before. So that's pretty intense. Again, though, teamwork. That's what it comes down to. Teammates.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Duke, exactly. Thank you very much, man, for joining us on the phone today. We really appreciate it. Good luck going forward with the No Limit Sports Lab. It's going to be great. We're super excited to see what all comes of it, man.
Thank you. Yeah, and you know, the Reno, Nevada area. If you guys want anybody to come and be that support system for your child, you know, on their journey to be a college athlete, you know, we're that team. Our staff, our professional staff, we have college, ex-college athletes, we have other NFL, other pro athletes and on our staff. So, you know, we know what we're doing. You know, we know how to get your kids to the next level, and we would enjoy doing that. So just wanted to get that out there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Duke. Have a great rest of your day and enjoy the weekend, man.
Okay, thank you.
That was Duke Williams. Big thank you to him for joining us on the program. Just a very fun facility, sounds like it's going to start up. And I agree. 8 teams. I would actually like to see it go to 16.
I was just going to say, I'd like 16. Yeah. I think that would be a proper way to discover
who's
the best.
You can absolutely shorten the season because really – to get to your conference championship game, it solely depends on conference record. Your overall record doesn't matter. It's your conference record that gets you to your conference championship game. So, yeah, play 9-10 games. Basically, have one fun game like in Ohio State, Alabama, and Oregon, Michigan State, something like that. Have a big marquee matchup and get in your conference season. Let's take, in my opinion, take your 10 conference champions and your next 6 highest-ranked teams, and there's your field of 16 and have fun.
Yeah.
We don't need 5-17 bowl games here, okay?
I'm tired of bowl games.
They're going to add more, I saw, so we're going to get down. We're going to end up having 5-7 and 4-8 teams in bowl games, which is preposterous. I listen to ESPN in the morning here because this is the studio that I do my traffics out of in the morning, and I heard Golic and Wingo talking, and Golic always gets on his high horse when he's like, oh, if you don't like the bowl games, don't watch it. A, you don't have to tell me that. I'm not going to watch it if I don't want to watch it. You don't have to tell me not to watch it. And B, if we want bowl games to mean something, don't put a team with a losing record in it. Otherwise, it resembles a participation trophy, basically.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like with the more bowl games we add, all they're doing is just giving everyone a trophy. It's like, oh, everyone deserves one. You gave the best effort. You didn't win. You lost 60-0, but we're going to give you a trophy regardless.
You won a third of your games, but hey, have a bowl game. Who cares? Ridiculous. Yeah. All right. When we come up after the break, short World Cup update, and then a certain player may retire in 5 years. Hold up.
Dun, dun, dun.
But first, Sean, we got something for the people.
We got a pair of tickets to the Reno Rodeo at the Livestock Event Center on Thursday, June 21st. Plus a 2-foot sub from Port of Subs.
So there you go. Caller number 9 gets it, 775-333-0945. My two Spenceworth after the break. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for My Two Spenceworth.
Oh, yes it is. Before we get into that, let's give a quick World Cup update. First off, some exciting news. It was announced earlier this week that the 2026 World Cup is coming to North America.
Oh, yeah.
United States, Mexico, and Canada will all co-host the World Cup. The first time that three countries have hosted a World Cup. I don't know how many times two countries have done it. I know Japan and South Korea did it in 2002. That's the only other time, to my knowledge, that two teams have shared the World Cup. But this will be the first time that three countries host it. Very excited. If I'm going to do everything I can to get to the World Cup final that year. I don't care if it's in Canada or Mexico. I'm going. Right now, there will be 16 venues. There are three in Canada that they have already chosen, Montreal, Edmonton, and Toronto. Mexico has also chosen their three cities in Mexico City, Monterey, and Guadalajara. And the U.S. has 17 venues that is now bidding for 10 spots. And sometime between 2020 and 2021, that 17 will be whittled down to 10. Of course, it's your usual suspects. The New Jersey Giants and Jet Stadium is up for it. Dallas, Nashville, San Francisco, L.A., because by that time, the Chargers and Rams will have their new stadium open in Inglewood.
Maybe we'll get it out here in Nevada, you know?
Maybe. You never know, man. You never know what could happen. But that's very exciting. I'm very excited for it. And if you haven't caught any of the World Cup so far, you've missed out on some pretty fun stuff. Russia opened up with a big 5-0 win over Saudi Arabia yesterday morning in the opener. It's the biggest opening win for a host team in the World Cup. And today was just full of drama. So remember, a game is 90 minutes plus a little bit with stoppage time and all that added. But Uruguay, who played Egypt earlier today, got an 89th minute goal to get the 1-0 win. And in the follow-up game, Iran versus Morocco, a 95th minute stoppage time own goal.
Wow.
Lost it for Morocco and gave the win to Iran. And that's a tough way to lose. It was a good ball. Not for the defense, obviously. It was a good crossover. The guy did a great job of stepping in front, got his head to it, and just, like, even watching the replay, it doesn't even seem physically possible that it went off his head into the goal, but it still did. So it's a tough break for Morocco. And then Portugal and Spain lived up to all the hype. Ronaldo got a hat trick, scored all three goals for Portugal. It was a very back-and-forth contest. That third goal came in the waning minutes off a free kick and just set the whole thing up in flames. 3-3 draw, first draw of the tournament, and it was just insane.
Wow.
Now, let's talk about this. So
take a breath.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Yeah.
Let's get ready to rumble.
So, earlier this week, it was announced that Kevin Durant, in an interview, and I wasn't originally going to talk about this, but nothing really caught my attention this week besides the World Cup, which I just talked about. But he had made a comment that said that he could see himself retiring in 5 years. Now, it's Durant saying that. So this caught me off guard for a few reasons. One, I didn't think he was that. I mean, I know he's been playing for a while. I didn't think he could see himself in 5 years saying goodbye to the sport. And then I was a little taken aback by that, also just the timing of it. But also, what does that mean? Because whenever we talk about LeBron James, it's always about championships. What about Durant? We don't talk about this. This is the second best player in the world. The fact that he's 2-1 in NBA Finals. And so if he sticks with the Warriors, and this Golden State crew sticks together for the next 5 years, let's say that Curry, Thompson, Green, and Durant all stay together for the next five. I don't think that'll happen. I think sooner or later money's going to get involved. So either one or two of those guys are going to have to leave eventually. But let's just say they stick together for the next 5 years. Untouchable. No one's going to stop them. We saw that this year. Their biggest challenge was Houston, and they got through them, I think, in five or six games. I can't even remember now. It was such a whirlwind. I'm so caught up in the World Cup. I don't remember what it was. I think
basketball was last
year.
We're in a different sport.
I know. Now it's. It seems like it was just last night, and yet it feels. Yeah, it's kind of a whirlwind when you get into playoffs. But either way, it just kind of caught me off guard because what if they stay together for 5 years and they win a title all 5 years, right? So let's say he ends with 7 championships. That will drastically change the conversation around Michael and LeBron, because it's been about championships. But if KD surpasses both of them, then what does it become? Because he's not being considered as the best player in the world. Nope. LeBron James is hands down, will never be, as he's playing the game, until he retires, he is the best player in the world. And all we talk about is championships. When we talk about Kevin Durant, it's not necessarily championships. It's the fact that he left a team in Oklahoma City because he was tired of, I think it was carrying the load. It was being that guy for that team. So he goes to a place where he didn't really have to be. They had Curry, they had Draymond, and those are the two, especially Draymond, those are the two real voices of that team. But ironically, ironically enough, this year, with Curry's injuries and Green kind of being off, they leaned on Durant. So we've seen that he can do that in Golden State. So even if he stays there and they succeed, and let's say Green or Thompson leaves and it comes down to three of them, what does it become now if it's fewer stars on that team? If it's Curry, Green, and Durant, and Durant continues to lead this team, where does that conversation take us?
I think we'd revisit it in 5 years, be like, are you retiring well, now? But he could see himself doing it. Maybe he just doesn't want to do the long haul of playing constantly, and he just wants to, you know, I've done my time, I've got my wins.
Yeah, but LeBron kind of said that too. LeBron kind of said, you know, when he was talking about the NBA schedule maybe being shorter, then you look at this season, it's the first season that he's ever played all 82 games. So I'm not sure if the 5 years is more wear on his body or if he's just starting to get sick and tired of this type of attention. Of, you know, is he the good guy? Is he the bad guy? Is he going to stay that way? Is he not going to stay that way? It'll be interesting to see. I kind of got caught off guard that Kevin Durant said he could be done in 5 years. It seems odd. But that's the show today. Thank you to all of our guests, Vince, Mike, Duke. You guys were all great. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for listening. Sean, great job on the board. Haley, you're great emotional support today. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @my2spenceworth. You can follow Sean.
@that_soundguy_Sean. Yeah, I got it that time.
And follow Haley in real life, but not too close. All right, have a good weekend, everybody.
ESPN Radio 94.5 FM, KUUB FM, Sun Valley, Reno.